Well, I'm going to kick us off. It's 8 o'clock, and it looks like we have a number of our participants online. So let me begin by welcoming everyone to this morning's webinar on getting sales transformation right, where in about the next 50 minutes, our guest speaker, Lou Schachter, will help you understand what's necessary in today's economy anyway to kind of truly transform a sales organization. My name is John Hoskins, and I'm the co-founder of Advantage Performance Group, and I'll be your host and sort of MC for the webinar today. Today's event is part of a series of webinars and sessions we've conducted over the past 9 months, and you'll see them here on this slide. I'd like to draw your attention to two additional sessions scheduled, and if you'll mark your calendars for those future events, we'd love to have you join us for those. Before I introduce our presenter in greater depth, let me just make a few housekeeping items and cover three things. In order to eliminate the background noise during Lou's presentation, we're going to mute your lines, and as time permits at the end of the webinar, we will open the lines to question and answer session. On the second note, the regard to note-taking, you need not be concerned with taking notes of anything that's on the slides, as we are happy to make those available to you through your Advantage partner in charge of your account. And the third housekeeping item will provide you the instructions for getting additional information and an in-depth in-house briefing for your company specific to sales transformation should you choose to want to follow up after this webinar. So our speaker this morning is Lou Schachter. He is the Managing Director of the Global Sales Practice at BTS based out of New York. And Lou brings to us some very practical and real-world experience because he's been involved on the front line with a number of clients around the globe, also across several industry segments who decided to set out and fundamentally sort of change the way that their sales force interacted with prospects and customers. So Lou has, prior to his work in the training field, been involved in investment banking. And before joining the consulting world, he attended the Wharton School. So, good morning, Lou. I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, good morning, John, and thank you, and thanks to all of you who are joining us on the call today. We think it'll be a really useful hour of your time. We hope so, and as John mentioned, we're looking forward to taking some questions and comments at the end of the presentation. I want to start off by just telling you a quick story. I'm a big fan of the New York Times, and I read it pretty much every day. And last week, I noticed they got a story wrong. Now, I know there are a lot of people out there who think of the New York Times as getting stories wrong all the time, but this particular one I noted, and I'm sure it's quite common that they get stories a little bit off, but in my mind, this one stuck out for me. You may have read that Xerox recently bought Affiliated Computer Services, and the Times said it was about a shift that technology companies are making from selling products to selling services. And that's really only half right, at least in my opinion. It can seem that way, that it's a shift from selling products to selling services. And in recent months, Dell bought Perot Systems and HP bought EDS. And if those of you who are listening are from a services company, you know that selling services can be highly profitable, but offering services is not enough to be successful in today's marketplace. So let's look at what this is really about. Those of you who have participated in my previous webcasts have seen this slide before. I'm going to cover it pretty quickly and in the context of the Xerox article, and then we'll move on to how to get sales transformation right. So until about 20 years ago, selling was really all about products. To be a good salesperson, you needed to have excellent product knowledge and the ability to identify your customers' needs so that you could match them with the right products. And then a couple of really important things happened. Number one, in almost every industry, low-cost providers came on the scene and offered the same products that others were offering, but at lower prices. That obviously put a downward pressure on margins. At the same time, this magical thing called the Internet popped up, which made product knowledge available on the web to just about everyone. That means that the salesperson's product knowledge has had less value than it once did because the customer can get that knowledge in many different ways. So in response to that, over the last 15 years or so, there's been a shift from product selling to solution selling that I'm sure you're all familiar with. Now, the basic idea behind solution selling is that you're going to wrap products and services together and use them to solve some problem that the customer is having. Usually that problem exists in the business process around where that original product purchase was being made. So for the last 10, 15 years, people have been really focused on moving their sales force from product sellers to solution sellers. And that has in large part been so successful that now everybody offers it. And as a result, it's not enough to differentiate you in the marketplace anymore. And even though the services that are wrapped into those solutions tend to have higher margins than the basic products, there are so many people now offering those services that that alone can't serve any longer to protect your margins. So a couple of years ago, we began to notice a shift to the next stage in the evolution of selling, and that is a focus on accelerating the customer's business results. You continue to sell products and you continue to offer solutions, but you do it in a way that is focused on the overall business results the customer wants to achieve, not just those in the business process you were selling into before. That has required a very different skill set for salespeople. If what salespeople needed to be successful as product sellers was great product knowledge, and if what they needed in the solution selling world was great consultative selling skills, what they need to sell accelerators is great business acumen. And that jump from what they've been doing in the past to selling accelerators is probably more significant than this graphic suggests. There is a big step up to having the knowledge that you need about the customer's business to be able to truly help them reach their goals faster. Usually it involves things like understanding who the customer's customers are, what the customer's value proposition to its customers is, what business challenges they face, what trends exist in their marketplace, et cetera, et cetera. And that is a lot of new information that salespeople need to be able to work with. Now, getting back to Xerox, a real perfect example of this evolution is Xerox. 20 years ago, Xerox sold copiers. That's what they were known for. And then, you know, lo and behold, a million different companies from around the world got into the copier business and began to flood the U.S. and the worldwide market with copiers, which meant that the basic margins on Xerox copiers went down drastically. So what did Xerox do? Well, it got into the business of selling solutions, primarily by wrapping services into the basic product offering. So Xerox began to sell financing for its copiers, training to use its copiers. It sold service contracts. It sold services to integrate with different office systems. It sold different kinds of warranties. And all of those services had higher margins than the products themselves, of course. Now, what does Xerox do today? Well, they've redefined themselves, so they're no longer a copier company, but a document company. They're helping their customers answer the question, how can I manage document flow better to achieve my overall business results that I'm trying to accomplish?
We appreciate your call to GIS. We'll be right with you.
So, let's get back to the New York Times article and the Xerox acquisition. In fact, what I need to do is mute the line, so just bear with me a second. Okay, sorry for that little pause. So, in the New York Times article, it mentioned the Xerox acquisition of Affiliated Computer Services. So what does that company do? It scans and digitizes those incredibly dense documents used for bank loans and Medicaid claims. So if you think about it, Xerox has gone from what it has been doing, which is helping customers take digital information in their computers and printing it, to helping companies take printed documents and convert them to digital information. So they've reversed the process. That's a major new way that Xerox can help customers achieve their business results. It's not that companies want to outsource document scanning services or that they're looking for scanning products. That's not really it at all. It's that companies in certain industries, like banking and healthcare, are struggling with the volume of non-digital information they have to process in this digital world. So Xerox will now be able to help them make major gains in those areas of the business. In fact, here's what the CEO of Xerox, Ursula Burns, said. The affiliated computer deal is largely a matter of following Xerox customers. They want us to intelligently knit together all this stuff, the information that makes businesses run. So it's not just about switching from products to services, as the article implied, and it's not just about adding services to be able to offer solutions. It is also about understanding the Xerox customers' business and what they're trying to achieve, and acquiring the capabilities that will allow those customers to achieve their business results faster. So when we talk about sales transformation in the title of this webinar, what are we really talking about? At BTS, we focus on helping companies through the sales transformation process, but what does that mean? Well, first, it means a large strategic effort, which means it comes from the top. This is not about one district or region, and it is aligned with the overall corporate strategy. It's not really just about sales, because the overall direction of the company usually requires that the entire sales approach be changed. The second piece is about changing the way the company goes to market, and that involves asking questions like, well, who are our customers? Where is the profitable growth? What do we want to offer our customers going forward? What channels will we sell through, and how? It also involves a change in the way we interact with our customers. What conversations do we want to have with them? Who do we want to have conversations with? How do we access and build value for executives in our customer organizations? And finally, it's about this shift from product or solution selling to accelerating the customer's business results. That last slide that I showed you, it means staying in front of what the competitors are doing by responding faster to what customers want today. And we know from the interviews we've done at BTS with over 200 executive-level customers and dozens of sales leaders that what customers want today is help achieving their business results. So for the rest of this presentation, we're going to focus on four things companies often get wrong when they initiate sales transformations and six keys to getting it right. So the first mistake is about confusing unaligned initiatives. Remember the game Twister, the kids' game where you spin a dial and get instructions to put your left foot on red and your right hand on green? Well, before long, everyone is tangled together and dropping in a heap, usually laughing hysterically. Unfortunately, a lot of the direction that salespeople receive today is much like put your left hand on yellow, now place your right foot on blue. And as a result, salespeople are overwhelmed, confused, and quite frankly tangled, and no one is happy. The parallel to the Twister instructions are the monthly or quarterly sales initiatives that are launched to the field. And of course, those are driven by a myriad of factors. They can be driven by declining sales in particular products or geographies. There can be reductions in margins that are being responded to. There can be responses to moves by competitors. And even sometimes initiatives are launched at the whim of top management. There's one Fortune 50 company that I work with where a board member decided that every salesperson should be dropping unsolicited proposals on the desks of all its competitors' customers, regardless of where those customers were in their buying cycles. So for 60 days, everyone had to stop what they were doing and focus on dropping unsolicited proposals on the desks of competitors' customers simply because that was what was being driven from the top. Regardless, though, of the originating reason, salespeople get confused and start to treat everything that comes down from management as the flavor of the month. And that creates disengagement and stymies execution rather than driving alignment and execution. The second mistake is about product knowledge. Product knowledge is important, but it will only drive product selling. So in the current days when travel budgets have been nixed, it's easy to focus on e-learning, and most e-learning is about product knowledge. But if the focus is only on products, salespeople will spray and pray, as they say, or more coarsely, as others put it, show up and throw up. If all they learn is how to do a feature dump, that is what they will do, and customers will respond by treating the product as a commodity that doesn't drive their business results. So they'll ask for a discount and make a decision based on price.
It strikes me as though it's a good example of a typical product knowledge online center. Nothing in the sub-bullets references anything about understanding your customer.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you know, one of my favorite things to do lately, because I spend a lot of time in airports, is look at the corporate ads that are in airports today. And you will find, if you start watching them, that there really are three kinds of ads. There are ads that, like this shot does, talk about product features. There are ads that talk about solving business problems. And then you'll see ads from companies now that are much more focused on the business results that the customer is trying to achieve.
And that's different by city. I was in San Jose the other day, and I'm looking at one of these ads, and the terminology they were using in the ad, I didn't even know what it was. You know, as just a general consumer, I was thinking, what the heck is that? You know?
Right, right. There's probably a heavily technical audience that those things are aimed at.
Yeah.
So in this recessionary environment, some sales leaders rightfully recognize that some customers are purchasing some of their company's products, but not all of them. And if they can increase their share of wallet with existing customers, they'll improve their revenues, of course. The mistake is to think that increasing this share of wallet requires simply informing customers about what products or services are also available. That rarely works. Products alone, even innovative ones, will not drive transformation. Only salespeople can really transform the relationship with the customer. And only when the customer can articulate how the products will drive the customer's business results will the customer start listening. Otherwise, all they're going to do is ask for a check quote to keep their current suppliers honest. So for mistake number three, let's talk about the single most important lever that you have to improve the performance of your salespeople. Some of you may be familiar with this data. It's from the Sales Executive Council, which studied 2,600 salespeople and 460 sales managers globally. As you can see, when salespeople have managers who are highly effective at coaching, on average they achieve 102% of their goal. When they receive a low level of coaching, they achieve only 83% of their goal. Now take that 19% gap and multiply it by the revenue your team produces today. Imagine if you could increase sales by that dollar amount. So it's tempting when training resources are scarce to invest directly in the frontline reps. But unless you already have a strong coaching culture, you'll actually get a better payback by investing in managers first.
It seems to me too, Lou, that, you know, those moments out in the field with the rep are where that frontline manager has to take the vision and strategy that's been communicated in number one and convince the rep of its value and also show them how to get beyond selling product. I mean, this really is the linchpin.
Absolutely, and we're going to actually talk a little bit more about how to manage that change process and communicate a vision in a couple of moments. So let's go to mistake number four, the final one, and this is about skipping some of the six critical elements of a successful sales transformation. The first is developing a better understanding of changing customer requirements. That means things like researching what your customers really value, making sure you're aligned with how your customers manage their buying cycles rather than just focusing on your own sales cycle, making sure you've made the transition from having a standard value proposition for everybody to enabling your salespeople to have customized value propositions that vary based on what business results the customer is trying to achieve, and of course measuring the real impact you're having on customers' businesses. The next critical activity is focusing on account management and the sales pipeline. Companies today that are leading in their industries are better at this than others are. There are new, faster, and more robust ways of doing account planning, yet at the same time, the new ways are less dreary and about filling out forms than some of the traditional account planning processes have been. We know today that salespeople are highly visual, want to be able to complete these sorts of things quite quickly, and want to see how effective they are very quickly. The next piece is around making sure that your markets are segmented correctly and that you've aligned salespeople to them. If you think back to that Product Solutions Accelerators graphic that I was showing you earlier, one of the things that we often see as we help a customer is McKinsey preceding us into an account and realigning salespeople so that you don't have expensive field salespeople going out and calling on customers who really are product-level buyers and just want the lowest possible price. You have to reallocate your best salespeople so that they are serving the customers who are looking to have their business results accelerated. The fourth one is refocusing sales training to emphasize these new sales skills. So, for instance, using business acumen training to improve people's ability to understand their customers' businesses. It means focusing on the value that you can create for each individual business and making sure there's real behavior change, not just skills and knowledge being transferred. It also means measuring the business impact of training investments, and that's something we're going to come back to a little bit later. The fifth one is leveraging the technology investments that have been made. Most companies have invested in sales automation and CRM systems, and yet they're not getting out of them what they have put in. So as part of the sales transformation process, there has to be a clear way to leverage those systems to support the salespeople and sales managers with information that they can really use to make a difference in their marketplace. And finally, it's all about aligning compensation with strategy to drive the right behaviors, making sure the incentives focus not just on revenue, but on margin and on customer engagement levels, and making sure that there are team incentives to everyone who is required to support major accounts. And don't worry, you don't have to wait until you get comp right to start the transformation. Comp always lags everything else. So let's turn now. Oh, sorry, go ahead, John.
Let me ask you about realigning salespeople, because I'd like to know your experience. If you ask the VP of sales at the beginning of this transformation, of the 100 salespeople or 1,000 or 10,000 salespeople that you're managing out there, your leaders are managing, how many of them do you really think can get on board with this and have the innate talent to do what you're asking them to do? What kind of percentages do you hear?
We do ask a question all the time, so thanks. It ranges, of course. We hear usually from 5 to 20% of people are selling in that accelerator mode today, and those are usually assigned to and driving the most profitable accounts. In general, people tell us that they think they've got another 40 or 50% of their sales force who could sell that way if they were given the right skills and coaching to be able to do it. And then there's some that they believe, of course, that are not going to be able to make that transition. Some of those may leave the company, but to the extent that all companies have some customers who just want to buy products based on price, the key is to reassign those reps to serve those customers. But at the same time, you've got to lower the cost to serve those customers, and you usually take those salespeople out of the field and put them in more of an inside sales operation.
Okay. Thanks.
So let's transition next to what you need to do to get it right. And we're going to start by looking again back at the diagram that I showed you earlier. And I'm going to mention something here that's really quite new. The recession is driving a change in the way customers are buying. And this is brand new information that we've been learning and sharing over the last few months. And we don't know for sure whether it's real and lasting or a temporary phenomenon. But I would love to get some comment on it when we get to the Q&A part of today's session. So what we're finding is that on the right-hand side of this dotted line, customers are continuing to be willing to pay a premium if you can accelerate their business results. But if you can't, they're treating you as a commodity and want to buy at the lowest possible price. So what's happening right now is that selling companies, sales forces, that are standing in the middle of the road selling solutions are being forced to go either left or right. There's really a fork in the road. Many companies have spent the last decade trying to get their sales force to adopt solution selling. Now, at this moment, that's a fairly dangerous place to be. You have to either move your people to the left or to the right. Some companies that we're working with are doing both, and they are, in some cases, creating two separate brands so that they can sell products at low costs and low margins to a wider range of customers, but then protect and grow margins where they can accelerate the customer's business results. What this probably means, though, is that if you're in the solution selling space and you've been promoting solutions, you may well be finding yourself deeply discounting in order to compete with the people who are selling products. So part of getting it right in terms of sales transformations means making sure you understand how your customers are buying today and organizing your sales force to respond to that.
Lou, I you know, you put these graphics up, and the only other thing I could comment is it's like the accelerator box and the skill sets that are there for a rep and the difference between selling at solution problem level and result accelerator. Graphically, if it were possible, I would move that step higher. It's a higher step. I think the transition from doing one to the other is much greater than what the graphic depicts.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. There are a significant set of skills that have to be learned to do this successfully. But at the same time, I don't want to make it sound impossible because there are a lot of leading companies out there absolutely doing it today. And I'll talk more about this in a few minutes, but it's not an overnight process. It's not just about announcing a new strategy that our approach going forward is going to be about accelerating the customer's business results. So sales transformation like the ones that we're talking about really require an 18 to 36 month effort to be successful.
Yeah, that would be the point. Like, if our participants were making an internal presentation around this, is to say, this is going to take time. You know, don't expect 90 days from now everybody to be selling at this level.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the second piece of getting it right is this change management component we referred to a little bit earlier. The best sales leaders recognize this, and here's how they do it. This is about what really differentiates good from great when it comes to sales leaders today. Great sales leaders not only execute, but they inspire their sales forces with a vision and a compelling strategy. So this is an example of some work we've done with Sony and its sales force. And let me just take you through what's behind each of these engage maps. The first thing that salespeople need to know if you want them to take on a new approach is to understand why this new approach is required. So that answers questions like, how are our customers changing? What trends are shaping our marketplace? How are our competitors changing? Have new competitors entered the market? What does the future look like if we don't change? Then it's really the what. What is our strategy? How will we be successful? How will we create value for our customers in a way that our competitors can't? Getting people clear about what the strategy is can help tremendously with that twister diagram I showed a little bit earlier. If people understand how the strategic initiatives connect together to support a broader strategy, they're much more able to and likely to execute against them. And then finally, the how piece. What does each manager need to do differently? What does each rep need to do differently? What are their priorities when they have competing needs in front of them? And how will they be organized? Now, there's another change management component that we'll look at next. So we all know that people go through stages when they experience change. We like to talk about four stages. The first is denial, which is just the defense mechanism where we avoid acknowledging the change. The second stage, on the lower left, is resistance. So we've acknowledged the change, but we've not accepted it. Then the next stage is exploration. We begin to find ways to accomplish the change. And finally, at commitment, we're fully aligned with the change. Now, there are a couple of interesting things about this when you apply it to sales transformations. The first is that the leaders of any sales organization have often spent months debating how to change, what to change. And as a result of those conversations, they have moved through this change curve. Then they are now committed to the change. When they announce it to the reps, they expect everyone to be as committed as they are on day one. And yet, the reps have not had the opportunity yet to go through this change curve process. So as part of successful sales transformation efforts, there's a recognition built in that over the first 30, 60, 90 days, things have to be done to help people through the change process. That includes one of the most successful things I've seen is identifying who are the informal opinion leaders in a sales force, and how do you bring them in early to adapt to the change and serve as ambassadors for the change effort. If you can find and motivate and engage those folks, you can help change the rest of the sales force more quickly. Let's move on to... Oh, go ahead, John.
I love that slide. I think that slide is really key, and there's sort of denial of denial, too. You know, you have people that sort of wink and nod and say, oh, yeah, I got it, and then they go out and make different calls. They don't really... Kind of going back to your other slide, how long... I mean, the three modules you showed there, how much time do you spend with the reps trying to orient them and get them to that commit before you start training? Yeah.
This is this is pretty typical of programs we've done with multiple clients, and this is a half-day program, and this was aimed at the sales leaders and sales managers, and then we actually gave them the ability to take these maps to their teams and run their teams through it, and then actually created an online version of these maps so that people who may not be directly involved in sales but do have a connection to the customer would also have the opportunity to go through the content. So it's sort of a half day in the classroom and about a couple of hours online.
Great. I didn't mean to slow you down, so I just wanted to emphasize, I think that's so key. That's different than what I've seen in other presentations around transformation.
Oh, thanks. No, not at all. Don't worry. I think we're good on time and looking forward to people's comments and questions in a little bit. Now, this next piece I think has been really powerful, and that is if you're going to sell in a mode that accelerates the customer's business results, one critical focus is the kinds of questions your salespeople ask customers. We've been teaching a certain set of questioning models for the last 20 years, and those were very appropriate for solution selling. What our customers tell us is that those are less appropriate for the way that selling needs to work in today's world where you're accelerating their business results. So we have developed a new questioning model that I actually want to share with you today, and the new North Star, I would call it, for that questioning model are the customer's business results. This is what executives tell us they want to talk about with salespeople. So when we talk about asking questions about results, we mean, you know, what's the organization's destination that it's trying to reach? And that's usually defined in terms of metrics and goals and some intangible outcomes. And these are things they're striving for both in the long term and the near term. So that first piece is asking questions about the results the customer is trying to achieve, not just with a purchase, but in their overall business. The second layer of our model is asking questions about opportunities. This is how they're going to get to the results that they've identified, and it includes things like initiatives and innovations and even areas of improvement that the customer may not be aware of, but that are things that are going on in their marketplace that they may be able to leverage to get to their results faster. The third layer is around problems. What challenges are customers experiencing that are limiting their ability to achieve their results? And if you can eliminate these barriers, they would create performance improvement. And finally, execution. So this is about all the actions that are required to implement the strategy and operate the business. It's the people responsible, the projects they're working on, business processes, and the products or services they're buying to resolve problems, realize opportunities, and produce results. As you can see now from the graphic, our sales questioning model spells rope. And if you look at this and think about, well, where are people good today and where do they really need to grow? You start at the bottom. Most salespeople are good at asking execution questions. They're comfortable with them, and if you go out on a sales call with them, most of the questions they ask tend to fall in this category. Now, if they've been trained in some form of consultative selling or solution selling, they're usually pretty good at asking problem questions as well. They've learned how to do that, and they can be effective at figuring out where the problems are in a particular business process. But very few reps are asking either results or opportunities questions. The good news is you can get good at it. It requires some skill building, some coaching, and some practice. Where companies have adopted this model, they're seeing a drastic change in the interaction between their salespeople and customers, in particular, executive-level customers. I'm sure you have some questions about this, and I'd be happy to take those in just a couple of minutes. The fifth piece of getting it right involves making sure you're doing skill building in all the areas that are required to be successful when you are selling in a way that accelerates the customer's business results. So we like to break this down into five pillars, and the first pillar is the ability to understand your customer. That's where that business acumen need of understanding your customer's industry sits. It's also where the ability to have conversations with executives sit, because those conversations with executives need to be about what's going on in their overall business and how they are dealing with the business challenges that they face. We find that in terms of reps, the place to start is usually understanding your customer. Now, the second pillar over in the 3 o'clock position on the right-hand side is about creating business impact. We use business impact here as a way of talking about value. We like to define value as business impact in a B2B world. That means, how is your offering going to improve those business goals that the customer has? The skills to do that require many things, but two of the most important are, A, the sales questioning model, like the one I just showed you, so that you understand what results the customer is trying to achieve and what their plan is for achieving those results and how you can help them do it. And a second one is also the ability to quantify the impact that your offerings will have on the metrics that the customer cares about in their business. Down in the 6 o'clock position at the bottom is communicate value, and that's about several things. One is it's about negotiating collaboratively with your customers in a way that recognizes the customer's interests and your own interests as a selling company. You need salespeople to identify as many interests as possible so that they can create multiple negotiating options. Otherwise, the negotiations wind up just being on a single dimension of price. The second thing that this pillar includes is the ability to hold interactive sales presentations. It's certainly no longer about just showing up with a deck of slides and making a presentation and following up with Q&A. Today's customers want an interactive sales experience from beginning to end, and those facilitation skills that are required to have that sort of a meeting is something we haven't really taught salespeople in the past. And the third part of this is around change management, and it's sort of an interesting thing. If you're displacing an existing provider, what customers tell us is that they're counting on you, the new salesperson, to help them with the internal change management process that's involved in changing from one supplier to another. There may be people in the organization who are used to the old way of doing things and uncomfortable with whatever change is required. There certainly may be people who are not supportive of the switch in suppliers. Executives tell us they don't have the staff to manage that process. They need the salesperson to have the change management skills that will help that process go smoothly. And of course, in the past, we really haven't taught salespeople change management skills. On the left-hand side is manage account strategy, and as I mentioned earlier, this is one of the things that really makes companies stand apart. It's something they tend to do later in their sales transformation efforts, but it's really critical to embedding the new approaches long-term. And what this means is not just building account strategies that have goals for how you'd like to grow the account, but more importantly, what are the customer's business goals over the next 2 to 3 years? And how can we as a selling organization support those goals? The companies that do this the best, and APG and BTS are currently doing this with some clients, are those that sit down with the customer and create a joint account strategy. And then finally, in the middle of it all, is what I acknowledged earlier is the most important piece, and that is sales managers coaching the performance of salespeople. That involves coaching on all the other pillars. It involves spending more of their time coaching than selling themselves, and it involves the sales managers making sure that the salespeople can focus on the customer's business and not get tied up in administrative requirements. So really, the leverage point for making these sales transformations occur is the sales manager. The sales managers then have to be aligned with the strategy and prepared to help people who are resistant to the change work through it, and of course coach the new behaviors. Without this, sales transformations can't succeed, so that's why we've put them at the center. Another key element to getting all of this right is thinking about learning programs, of course, not just as a single event, but really thinking of how to change behavior over time. So, before any sort of learning event or set of learning events, what we have found, this is Advantage Performance and BTS, is that it's critical to build an impact map, which I'll describe to you in a second. Those of you who are familiar with the Advantage Way probably recognize this graphic, and for those of you who aren't, I'm going to touch it at a high level, and your Advantage partners can certainly take you more deeply through it. I think the results that we're seeing from clients who incorporate the Advantage Way into their business has shown incredible results. So this impact map is really about identifying not learning objectives or not starting with learning objectives, but starting with what are the business results that we're trying to achieve as a sales force. And maybe even more specifically for an individual salesperson or sales manager, what results are they accountable for? Based on those, what are the behaviors that are required to achieve those results? And then finally, what are the knowledge and skills necessary to make those behaviors possible? That impact map creates a much better designed learning program, number one. And number two, it can be used to make sure there's alignment between what the executives are trying to do with the sales force and with the broader organization and what the learning program is going to help sales people and sales managers achieve. The second step that you see here is participant and manager alignment. That same impact map can then be used to create what we call a line of sight between what people are going to learn in the classroom or in the learning program and what they are accountable for back in the job. There is some great research that our colleague Rob Brinkerhoff has done around how much better impact you get from any sort of learning experience if the participant goes in understanding how this learning relates to what's expected of them on the job, the business results they're accountable for, and the overall business results of the organization. The next step is, of course, the actual workshop experience itself. And one of the things we see that makes a big difference in moving salespeople to new behaviors is the use of discovery-based learning. We know that we can only change behavior when we really interact with our peers and we are able to talk about our own relevant experiences and probably most importantly discuss the implications of change with people we trust. That's what actually drives behavior. If we're just sitting passive in a classroom listening to an expert in the front of the room, we're very unlikely to actually change our behavior as a result afterwards. Now, speaking of afterwards, in order to make sure that the learning is applied, there are two key steps. One is to create an action plan during the program that is then discussed with the manager of the participant post-program, and there is accountability to that plan as well as coaching from the sales manager. Finally, by implementing that action plan, you drive the business results that you were seeking in that original impact map, and you can, in fact, measure them quite efficiently as well. I think it may be a little bit ironic, and maybe or maybe not, that the process of learning has shifted just as sales is shifting. In both cases, the emphasis today is on what business results are going to be generated. So with that, I'm going to bring things to a close and use this slide as an opportunity to take questions about any of the things that I've covered today. So John, let me turn it back to you for any comments, and then if you want to ask a question, please press star 6 on your phone, and that will unmute your line.
Well, thanks, Lou. We do have some time left for Q&A, so if you press star 6, that will unmute your line, and we will be able to ask Lou to field a couple of questions from his work.
Lou, are you able to hear me?
I am, Rex, yes.
question I had was, if I were a sales leader in an organization and wanted to go about implementing a sales transformation, you've talked about best practices, about how to go about doing that. Have you noticed or seen any best practices around gaining acceptance internally from the organization about implementing a sales transformation? In other words, if I were a sales VP, what are some best practices I could use if I realize that sales transformation is needed to gain acceptance inside the organization to implement it?
Yeah, it's a great question, Rex, and I was actually with a group of top executives from a company about a month ago where they were going through exactly that process. And it's the steps are very similar to what you take the sales force through, and that starts with a recognition that our customers are changing. It's not any sort of criticism of the work we've done in the past as salespeople or as a sales force or as an organization. It's that what got us here is not going to get us where we need to go. And that involves the top leaders of an organization cross-functionally sitting down and thinking about how are our customers changing, what's going on in our marketplace in terms of trends, and how is our competitive environment changing. So you're absolutely right to point out that there is a sort of a stakeholder management issue involved in any sales transformation effort, and we certainly know that more narrowly, a sales transformation isn't going to be successful if only the sales force changes. It requires a change in the approach that marketing uses. It requires a change in the approach that HR uses in terms of compensation. It requires a change in the approach that customer service uses. In many cases, it requires a change in how products are distributed to customers. So it really is something that needs to involve the entire company. Did that
Thank
answer
you.
What you're getting
Appreciate
at? Okay,
it.
Great.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Jim Trunick. How are you?
Hey, Jim.
Question for you. Excellent discussion on sales transformation. We're in the healthcare field, and curious, as senior management has so much access to the data, metrics, and ROI that drive the quantity of sales calls and the general performance of a sales rep delivering product knowledge, do you have any recommendations or thoughts or experiences about those metrics or data points that are some of the measures that can be used to show that we are, in fact, asking better questions besides just the raw sales results? Because senior leadership will look at their metrics around share of voice data or other things to say arms and legs on the street is, in fact, still the best way to go. If we're going to change the paradigm around some of these transformation issues, what other data points or metric levers do you have experience with that we could think about for reinforcing this message to senior management?
Thanks, Jim, for that question. I might ask John Hoskins to comment afterwards as well, because I'm sure he has some thoughts about that. And in your world, in the healthcare world, this is a particularly critical issue, as if you just look at more traditional pharma, there's a massive change going on from just sort of share of presence in the doctor's office to a shift with fewer reps talking to physicians and increasingly physician groups about other things in addition to just the product itself. So particularly when revenues are under pressure, there is, as you mentioned, a tendency to start watching the metrics. And there's always the output metric of results, which is the best way to go. But how do you know that you're making progress toward the new results that you want to achieve? And I think this is where you have to be careful about only measuring the number of meetings or things dropped off, et cetera. The best way I find to measure this, and I'm interested in John's comments as well, is through coaches, sales managers, going on field calls with the reps and actually observing the behaviors that they're exhibiting according to some sort of standardized set of checklist of behaviors that identify both what a new approach to selling accelerators would be as well as more traditional approaches. And then, of course, giving the reps direct feedback on those behaviors, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to drive the improved results. But John, would you want to comment on that as well?
Sure. Jim, are you device or pharma or biotech? Or
both. Yeah, both device and pharma.
Oh, okay. I would agree with Lou. I think that, you know, the 3 feet between the customer and the rep, that's what I would want to observe. I remember a quote from a client of mine, who's the VP of sales, says, you know, I went out in the field, we had a very busy day, we made a ton of calls, but I'm not sure we sold anything.
And yeah.
You know, like talking brochures. So it's just really the crucible is getting out there and having the managers find out what are the reps really doing. What is your standard around the amount of time a manager has to travel in the field?
Yeah, we have, you know, 100-plus days that we're in the field with coaches, coaching representatives, and so forth. And I think as far as coach forms and sales modeling and linking it up to, development plans and competencies, we're really in pretty good shape on that front. I think the background of my question has to do with, in order to retool the sales team around better questioning skills and better coaching for coaches, takes time and money, and you need to pull them out of their current model to retrain and to build either e-learning programs or classroom situations, but to get a better quality and a better results and accelerator discussion going versus just product discussion takes some training, and it takes some time, and it takes some resources, and you have to go to somebody above you to say, we need more resources and time to accomplish these sales transformations. And while they recognize it's important because they see the customer changing, there becomes a debate internally about, well, how much time do we really need? And there always lies, can you take a 3-day program and make it an hour and a half?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. When was the last time they were in the field?
Yeah, good point. And I think that's a great observation, and it's one that I took away from this as well, is I think the more that they can understand what the customer's going through, and I think you said it well, Lou, is to sell that to senior management, to help them start off with, look, here's what our customer's really asking us and changing, and you wouldn't buy from you in this current model. We got to all change the way we approach this. And I've been saying for a long time, you know, let's stop, product push and start, you know, creating buyers.
Absolutely. One of the things I think that's being said by executives when they start driving the metrics around numbers of meetings is that they don't trust the sales managers.
Right. Yep.
And so... Yeah. Getting at exactly why that is and what the issue is probably part of the solution.
Good point. Thank you very much. I appreciate the discussion.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Anybody else have a question for Lou? Well, Lou, maybe we should talk about our call to action.
Indeed. So we have the opportunity to offer you several ways to take the information that you've heard today and apply it yourself. The first is, if you connect with your Advantage Performance Group partner, you can get a free copy of our book, which is The Mind of the Customer, published by McGraw-Hill a couple of years ago. Second of all, we would invite you to have us help you work with your sales leaders. We have a 2 to 3 hour interactive session based on this engage map that you see at the center of the slide that takes people through what makes sales transformations successful. We've done this many times now with top sales leadership or with the top executives of different companies, and they have found it an enormously powerful way to organize their thinking about what's next for them and what they need to focus on. And then the third thing that is available to you is a set of these slides from today's presentation, and you can also access those through your Advantage Performance Group partner.
Good.
Lou, thank you so much again for your time and preparing for this webinar. I think it's been really informative. I think the slides could be valuable to people like Jim and others as they're selling internally the concept of sales transformation. So. Kudos again for a well-thought-through presentation, sharing your experience. And thanks to our participants for hanging in with us and getting through the presentation, and again, invite you to come to the next two sessions and look forward to seeing you at those webinars. So have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.